Consolidated Edison Company of New York, Inc., Mrs. Federal Community Regulatory Commission, Mrs. Dorber, Mrs. Senior, Ms. Hager, Mrs. Spock.
May it please the court. These cases are contract matters. In the first case, Entergy contracted to purchase one of two services, electric services, from Consolidated Edison, and to do so without regard to netting or the facilities Con Edison used in rendering the service. In the second case, NYPA contracted for an electric delivery service entitlement and agreed to pay fixed contract demand charges that would not vary without regard or with regard to the level of service that NYPA used. I'd like to focus on two questions in light of those contracts. First, whether in the Entergy case, FERC misread unambiguous contracts as to which it lacked jurisdiction. And second, whether FERC violated the filed rate doctrine in the NYPA case by excusing NYPA from the payment of contract demand charges when it failed to use, when it declined to use the service that was available to it. Now, I'd like to say at the outset that these being contract cases, the Niagara Mohawk case on which FERC relies is irrelevant here. That case affirmed FERC's approval of the netting tariff.
Can I just ask about that? Since these are contract cases, I'm not sure why the filed rate doctrine would apply at all. If you're right that there's a contract here, then FERC is wrong because it said there wasn't a contract here. If you're wrong, there is no contract here, then the filed rate doctrine wouldn't apply. So why do we need to think about the filed rate?
Filed rate doctrine, Your Honor, is an issue in the NYPA case.
Is it an issue if FERC's interpretation of the contract is correct?
It is, Your Honor.
Even if FERC is correct that there is no contract for this, that this is not covered by the tariff?
Well, let me explain the rates in the NYPA case. In that case, NYPA contracted to for delivery service with respect to energy that it acquired from one of two sources. And the charges under the tariff for that service are contract demand charges. They're predicated on a contract demand quantity
If we think FERC is correct, that the services provided in this case were not covered by either of those two, then why would the filed rate doctrine apply? Filed rate doctrine only applies to a filed rate. And if we were to conclude this is not the filed rate, then why would it apply?
Your Honor, at paragraph 46 of FERC's initial NYPA order, FERC acknowledged that NYPA had an entitlement to service from those two sources of supply, and that NYPA had a contract obligation to pay the rates prescribed by the passing tariff.
I thought FERC's position was that this didn't come from either of those two sources.
That's correct, Your Honor. The FERC's position is that when NYPA nets, it's not using those two services. However, the charges under the passing tariff apply regardless of whether NYPA uses a service under that tariff.
FERC's position is that they don't apply. They only apply if it's one of those two services. Maybe you're right, in which case you're right on the contract. But if you're wrong, I don't see how the filed rate doctrine has any application.
Your Honor, I'd analogize, as we did in our brief, to a passenger on a train who buys a monthly commuter ticket to travel between two cities. The passenger pays the same amount regardless of whether it rides the train every day or doesn't ride it at all. The fact is the tariff of the railroad prescribes a rate, as does the tariff that NYPA contracted for in this case.
Go ahead.
Now, as to the Entergy case, we submit that FERC had no jurisdiction to consider the complaint that Entergy filed challenging the rates that Con Edison assessed. In that case, the jurisdiction provision of the contract specifically said that the state and federal courts in New York had exclusive jurisdiction with respect to disputes arising out of the contract. Beyond that, the contract was one for state jurisdictional services. The complaint that Entergy filed disclaimed all issues relating to any FERC jurisdictional services. The contract provided that Entergy would take service without regard to netting and without regard to the facilities that Con Ed used in rendering the service. And so FERC really had no need to even look at the contract.
FERC, no need to look at the contract?
I'm sorry. FERC had no need to look at those two issues, the issue of whether of what facilities Con Ed used or whether Entergy netted.
You're relying on the contract, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Suppose Entergy became more efficient and needed less station power. Would it still, what would it then pay for? Suppose it needed half as much.
The rates in the Entergy case differ from those in the NYPA case. The NYPA case had fixed rates based on the potential.
I know that. That's why I was asking about this one. So they would pay less, right?
Absolutely would, yes.
Well, if they can pay less by buying less, why can't they buy none and pay none?
The contract in the Entergy case states that Entergy will purchase the services with respect to its station use energy, which is a defined term which is defined as the energy that all of the electricity that Con Edison delivers to Entergy for consumption. Con Edison delivers energy continuously to Entergy. For the last several years, it's been energy that Entergy has derived by netting. But that doesn't excuse Entergy from payment obligations under the contract.
I thought we were on the question of jurisdiction. On the jurisdiction question, FERC said that all the facilities involved in delivery of power over those two transmission lines, which are the ones that Con Ed says it's providing power, are transmission facilities, and all are under control of the New York ISO. And they further found that Entergy has met its burden of proof to demonstrate that no Con Edison-owned local distribution facilities are used. The connecting lines and the feeder lines both function solely as transmission facilities. Now, it is the case that FERC has jurisdiction over the transmission facilities, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why doesn't it have jurisdiction to determine the prices paid, whether you're right or they're right, for transmission over those facilities?
Your Honor, FERC does have clearly jurisdiction over transmission services. And as to that, with respect to the delivery service, we acknowledge that netting may be applied.
I'm asking whether netting may be applied, only on the jurisdiction question. Why don't they have the authority to interpret this contract because the power flows over an interstate entity, namely the New York ISO's transmission grid?
Because Entergy, in its complaint, Your Honor, specifically said there were no issues with respect to transmission.
Well, leaving aside what they said, this is a jurisdictional question for the commission. The commission's found that it had jurisdiction because the power flowed over an interstate entity. Why isn't that good? I mean, they may be wrong with respect to their merits decision. You may be right about the contract, but why didn't they have jurisdiction?
For a number of reasons, Your Honor. They were interpreting a contract which vested jurisdiction in state courts. That's something that should have been honored under the filed rate doctrine.
You were about to say that you're not contesting netting. You clipped the sentence off, and I wanted you to finish.
I'm sorry, Anna. Was it with respect to NYPA or Entergy? We're not Entergy. Challenging NYPA's netting. As long as NYPA pays the contract demand charges that it undertook to pay under the passing tariff.
But you are challenged for Entergy?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. FERC read this. Is it Section 3.15 is the critical section of the contract?
Yes, Your Honor. Page 82 of the record.
Right. 82. And it says there, either take bundled or unbundled, right? And it shall, at buyer's option, provide unbundled delivery service, et cetera, et cetera. Buyer shall purchase either, et cetera, et cetera. FERC says that there's no sale here.
Your Honor, the first sentence in delineating the services that Con Ed was to provide says that Con Ed will provide either bundled sales service or, if Entergy buys its power from another source, unbundled delivery service.
Yeah. Entergy sellers shall, at buyer's option, either sell or provide. Right? Yeah, I've got that. But the next sentence it talks about the buyer purchasing, and then the following sentence talks about the service being provided under your retail access tariff.
Under two tariffs, Your Honor. The first one is the sales tariff.
Bundled, the second is unbundled.
Exactly.
Yeah, I understand. But FERC said this wasn't retail service being provided here.
FERC has acknowledged in various orders, Your Honor, that where a sale is made of station power to a generator, that sale is a retail sale and subject to state jurisdiction.
No, but in Niagara, we said that they could make an exception to that rule with respect to providing to a generator, right? That was their general rule.
I believe in Niagara, Your Honor, the ruling was that to affirm FERC's determination that no sale occurred when a generator netted a station power.
Right.
And that takes us back to the fact that under this contract, Entergy was not eligible for the delivery service because it didn't buy its power from a third party.
No, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not being clear. I thought you were saying that it was the case that FERC had generally said that service of delivering energy to end users was retail. But in Niagara, the court acknowledged that and then said, but it is a reasonable interpretation of Order 888 to carve out an exception from the term end user for wholesale generators. Since it's a fiction anyway, FERC is not required to extend this fiction to the new creature in the market.
It goes to the question of whether FERC can require Con Edison to use distribution facilities in rendering the service to Entergy. And at the time these contracts were executed in 2000 and 2001, FERC's policy was that it recognized the existence of a state jurisdictional delivery service even where the utility did not use distribution facilities in rendering the service. It changed that policy, and I'm sorry, it initially stated that policy in Order 888 in 1996. It affirmed it in 1999 in a San Francisco area, Bay Area Rapid Transit case, and it further reiterated the statement in 2002 in the New England or Northeast utility case. It wasn't until 2003 when FERC changed that policy, which is what the court affirmed in Niagara Mohawk.
You have me confused now. The very first sentence you uttered when you stood up was that this was a contract case, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
I thought your theory was that what FERC ruled in Mohawk, Niagara, and everything else is not relevant here because the only question here is the interpretation of this contract, right? Isn't that your theory? I mean, aren't you challenging FERC's statement that we do not interpret the contract as expressly or impliedly prohibiting Entergy from self-supplying its station power? Isn't that what you're arguing?
FERC views the Entergy contract as inapplicable because Entergy has, in its mind, in FERC's mind, a third option to net
the
station power.
But that is the issue, isn't it? You're challenging that interpretation of the contract, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And we're challenging it because under the contract.
Go ahead.
Because under the contract, Entergy committed to take one of the two services for all of the station use energy that are required for its facility. And station use energy is defined as the energy that Con Edison, all the energy Con Edison delivers for consumption by Entergy.
Can Con Edison
services were all inclusive.
Can Con Edison deliver bundled service?
Yes, we can, Your Honor.
You still have generators?
Con Edison buys its power in the market and resells it to consumers on a bundled basis, bundled together with transmission and
distribution. Can anybody else supply bundled energy?
Beg your pardon, Your Honor?
Is there any other source of bundled energy?
Con Edison does have
other than Con Ed.
Your Honor, I would guess that some of the marketers may provide a bundled sales service to consumers where they acquire the power from a generator and arrange for the transmission and distribution services. I suppose it's possible for them to do it.
The economics of this are what? That energy, because it nets, receives less than it otherwise would have for it, the power it generates, right?
Energy receives less?
If it nets, it receives less than if it, for the power it generates, than it would have if it did not net.
The power output from the generator is what it is. It's a gross amount. The netting process involves Entergy's basically borrowing from the ISO market energy, and they net that at the end of the month.
But the amount of money that Entergy generates is less because it nets.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right? But Entergy must have made a calculation that that even though that's less, it's still, it would have lost even more if it paid Con Ed and didn't net.
That may well be, Your Honor.
How long are these contracts in existence?
These contracts, the Entergy contract was executed in 2000 in connection with Con Ed's sale of the Indian Point nuclear generator to Entergy. So as part of a larger deal, this contract arrangement for...
When does it expire?
I think it's an indefinite contract. I think it expires when Entergy closes the plant, ceases operations.
So it's in perpetuity?
Yes.
We'll hear from FERC. I'll give you some time for a vote.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Holly Kafer for the Commission. With me at Council table are Mr. Glenn Bernstein for Entergy and Mr. Kenneth Simon for the New York Power Authority. I guess I'll turn directly to the Entergy case first, and I would actually agree with counsel for petitioner that this is a contract case, and what the Commission found is that the contracts are not applicable, and it went ahead and applied the actual filed rate in this case, which is the New York ISO services tariff.
Just before you get to that, the jurisdiction of FERC, is it based on the idea that whatever energy is being transmitted here, it's being transmitted over transmission,
and that's correct.
And therefore it's interstate.
That's correct, Your Honor, yes. The Commission, before the Commission in the Entergy case, the primary issue really was the nature of the facilities, and what the Commission found was that those are the only facilities at issue are transmission facilities. Con Edison has attempted here to charge Entergy for local distribution services, which but it's not using any local distribution facilities, and as this court held in Niagara Mohawk, that those charges should not apply.
This is purely an abstraction, isn't it? I mean, there's nothing physical that changed in April of 2003.
That's my understanding, yes, right. Your Honor.
And so before 2003, was energy self-supplying or not?
I believe that before 2003, energy was not self-supplying.
And the only reason for that is they didn't do the calculation. The netting calculation. It's not that anything changed. It's just a pure mathematical shift. That's all.
My understanding is that it is an accounting mechanism. Yes.
Yeah.
So, with regard to Entergy, then.
So, why does the contract not apply?
The contract does not apply. First of all, because there are only transmission facilities at use here, so there is only a transmission service at use. As to transmission services, the New York ISO services tariff does apply, and there's nothing in the Entergy interconnection agreements with Con Edison that demonstrates that contract is supposed to apply to transmission services.
In 2003, the parties didn't agree with that.
Before 2003, the issue had not come to the Commission, and I'm not sure that...
I know it didn't come to the Commission, but the parties, Entergy paid Con Ed for 3 years, right?
It appears that they did, yes, Your Honor, and I think that you're referencing Con Edison's course of performance argument, which, of course, was not made to the Commission on rehearing, so the Commission didn't really have an opportunity to address that. However...
But the Commission acknowledged it, didn't they? That's just self-evident, that nothing changed until 2003 and the contract was in existence beginning in 2000.
Right, right. The commission certainly acknowledged that the complaint only presented to it the period from April 2003 forward. And as to the period before 2003, the commission didn't consider it. And also in that regard, apparently Con Edison was not actually charging Entergy for transmission service under the interconnection agreement in the pre-April 2003 period, so that the course of performance really sort of cuts both ways.
Could you explain, if you take a look at the wording of 3.14, FERC's position, I understand it, is that this only applies, this doesn't apply with respect to self. Right.
On-site self-supply, right. It does right. not apply to on-site self-supply.
And that's because of which words? The if the generator purchases or otherwise obtains energy from a person or entity other than Con Edison? And that when it says a person or entity, it's not talking about itself?
That certainly supports the commission's interpretation. And also the commission, I believe, interpreted both parts A and B of this first sentence of 3.14 and 3.15 of the other contract as providing only for purchases and sales and not when Entergy engages in on-site self-supply, which, consistent with Niagara Mohawk, there's no sale there.
Your position is, FERC's position, I take it, is that such bundled sales services or unbundled delivery services, they're not the only two options, right?
Exactly, Your
Honor,
there's
a third option.
There is a third option, on-site self-supply, and that's the option Entergy's using.
Again, where does that come from in here? It just because it's not mentioned?
Exactly. The commission inferred from the silence.
Then maybe why couldn't they buy their bundled services from a third party as another option?
Well, I think that the contract provides in Section A that if Entergy is going to be purchasing bundled services, it would be purchasing that from Con Edison only. Where it has,
you're just saying this contract doesn't cover all the options, and if you're right about that, then it certainly doesn't cover buying bundled services from a third party.
I suppose you're, yes, you're right.
That wouldn't be a very plausible interpretation of the contract. Why have a contract?
Well, the contract specifies the services that Entergy could obtain from Con Edison. What it didn't say is that Entergy couldn't go somewhere else in order to itself, essentially, to get those services.
The three option theory of self-supply or self-supply remote or third-party supply comes from the Midwest case, is that it?
No, Your Honor, I'm sorry. The three options for station power were really first discussed in the PJM decisions, which were followed by the Keyspan and decisions that were affirmed in the Niagara Mohawk case. The Midwest Generation case, I believe you might be referring to, that was a case where the commission refused to consider a complaint that concerned only retail services. And I believe that the petitioner, Con Edison, has relied on that case to say the commission doesn't have jurisdiction here. The commission, of course, took the position that the only issue here is, in fact, transmission service, so that we would have jurisdiction.
Does the commission's interpretation depend on the idea of netting, or that is, that netting means no sale or purchase? Or does it also just mean that this, does it also depend on an idea that it's ambiguous as to what happens if you're not buying from a another person or entity?
I believe the commission did indicate that the language is ambiguous. I don't know.
I guess it doesn't really explain exactly.
Right. I don't know whether the commission's interpretation relies on the absence of netting.
It doesn't say anything about it being ambiguous. It says, rather, the contract only addresses this situation.
Right.
Anything about ambiguity.
The commission signaled that there might be some ambiguity in the contract when it began its paragraph. I believe it's.
In fact, it says we don't interpret the contract as expressly or implicitly.
Right.
So and what saying the, it's and not the, ambiguous.
And the commission went on to infer from the silence of the contract on the third option of on-site self-supply that Entergy could use that service. But it, also that paragraph, paragraph 24 at J352-353, starts with the words "our reading," and to us that suggested that there was some ambiguity, that the commission saw some ambiguity in the contract.
So do you want to go into the New York Power?
Sure, thank you. Yes.
Why, what's the commission's explanation for relieving NYPA of this fixed contract demand charge that's in the tariff?
Well, with regard to, if we're discussing the language in the Clean Power Interconnection Agreement, the Commission, again, just as in the Entergy contract, found that this leaves open the third option of on-site self-supply.
The contract in the New York Power Authority case doesn't, that doesn't prohibit self-supply, right?
Yes, Your Honor, it does not.
Yeah. But there's the tariff. What about the tariff?
Right, with regard to the contract demand provisions.
Yeah.
The commission found that this contract does and the tariff do not apply to on-site self-supplied station power at all, and so that would include also the contract demand.
What section is the, are these contract demand charges? What section of the agreement is that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What section of the agreement is, can we find the contract demand charges?
You can turn to JA page 612. That's in volume 2 of the JA, and that discusses the calculation of contract demand.
I was looking at the contract. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is in the PASNY tariff.
Oh, it's in the.
The contract demand provisions are in the PASNY tariff. The interconnection agreements incorporate the rates from the PASNY tariff by reference.
Can I, with respect to this NYPA matter? So this is not a case about netting. This is about actual, except for the pouch situation. This is about actual on-site generation?
Yes, Your Honor. Actually, in both the Entergy and the NYPA cases, both of the generators are using on-site self-supply, and you're correct, except as to the pouch terminal where NYPA used remote self-supply.
So this contract says, that is the NYPA one, says that Con Edison shall provide for unbundled delivery for station use energy that the generator acquires from a third party or remotely self-provides. And FERC's view is that there's another alternative here, which is on-site generation, and therefore pretty much expressly doesn't apply.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And with respect to the contract demand issue, that's part of the PASNY tariff. And the next paragraph of 3.14 says, Con Ed shall provide the unbundled delivery service, shall, referring to the service in Part A under the PASNY tariff. And FERC's view is that since it's not providing that service, all these provisions of the PASNY tariff, like the contract demand provision, don't apply.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. Which I think also then leads to the point that you made earlier, which is that if this contract does not apply, then the commission cannot have violated the filed rate doctrine or the rule against retroactive rate making for that matter.
Or the rule against perpetuities or anything else.
Or anything else, right? Exactly. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Timmons.
Thank you, Your Honor.
What's your response to this last point?
The last point being, Your Honor?
That the contract doesn't subject unbundled services to the tariff.
With respect to the NYPA case, Your Honor?
Yeah, that was the last point.
Again, the NYPA contract entitles NYPA to a delivery service from two specific sources, and it agreed to pay charges for that sources that are the same every month, regardless of whether it uses the contract service or not.
Well, but what about, so you agree that it does not, at least paragraph A, does not apply to self-generated power, right?
Self-supplied power.
Self-supplied power.
In the sense that the power comes from the ISO.
Yes.
And NYPA receives it via Con Edison's lines. We agree that...
It doesn't apply to that.
That's correct.
Okay, so if it doesn't apply to that, Part B says Con Edison shall provide the unbundled service, which is not that service, under PASNY. Why isn't it a reasonable interpretation of the contract to say that PASNY doesn't apply at all?
We agree, Your Honor, that netting by NYPA does not violate the contract, that they're entitled to net, but they do have ongoing obligations under the PASNY tariff with respect to their...
So the question is, why does the PASNY tariff apply when they net, since the contract says that it applies when unbundled delivery service is made, and it's not being made here?
Because the rate for that service entitlement, for the unbundled delivery service, applies regardless of the usage.
What words do you rely on for that proposition?
Sorry. In Section 314, Con Edison shall provide to generator and generator shall pay for unbundled delivery service. Generator acquires from either of two sources. That entitlement persists. FERC recognized that in paragraph 46 of its opinion. And it also recognized that NYPA had a continuing obligation to use that. Now,
well, where is that part? Where is the to use it part? I don't see that. I see that Con Edison has agreed that it will provide the service and that they pay for that service, but only of two kinds. It doesn't say the kind that's at issue here.
But the question is, what do they pay for that service? And under the PASNY tariff, which is specified as the applicable tariff in the next section, they're obligated to pay the on-track demand charges independent of their use of the service. They can.
But FERC's position is that PASNY doesn't apply unless the service is actually provided. And I understand that may not be your understanding, but I don't understand why that's not a reasonable reading of the language. Con Edison shall provide the unbundled delivery service under the PASNY tariff. Okay, so if it provides it then it applies. But it doesn't say that if it doesn't provide it, which is the circumstance here, that this tariff applies.
The tariff provides that gap, Your Honor.
Why do I even look at the tariff
Because it says generator shall pay for the service. Now, FERC reads that as applying only when they actually use the service, but under the tariff, that charge applies regardless of whether they use the service or not. It's like the train ticket.
Well, the question is what the party signed onto, and if the train ticket had another provision in it that said, I don't know, a little hard to say it's the same as the train ticket, because the train ticket you buy one and that's the end of it. But here, this seems pretty ambiguous as to whether PASNY applies if the contract doesn't apply.
But here,
imagine you're wrong, just for the moment. Imagine you're wrong. Imagine we were to conclude. Just I want to know what comes next. Imagine we were to conclude that FERC's interpretation is reasonable. What else would be left of the case with respect to the NYPA?
The FERC's interpretation is reasonable that NYPA is free to net a station power. We agree with that.
No. And if its interpretation is reasonable that PASNY doesn't apply in the self-supply situation?
We submit, Your Honor, that would violate the filed...
What if they were right? What if this contract said it does not apply to what the plaintiffs in this case request? Imagine those were the exact words. Now, would there be a filed rate problem?
The PASNY tariff has been on file for 30 years. Yes, Your Honor, there would be a filed rate.
Even if it expressly said here, in fact, the first sentence after the word services were... Petitioners in this case are wrong with respect to their interpretation of the contract.
I would still maintain, Your Honor, that it's not a matter
tough.
Of contract interpretation. It's a matter of applying the tariff.
Can you walk me through so I can understand your argument? Is the Counsel for the commission referred to JA 612. Is that the operative provision of the tariff?
608 and 612 are the pages that set forth the tariff provisions.
612, right. And so there are charges that are imposed regardless of the amount of that shows up on the meter. Is that the point? And it's based on the maximum potential demand?
Exactly, Your Honor. That's a quantity that's determined at the outset of the service when the customer contracts for service. We look at their equipment and we figure out how much energy they could conceivably consume if they operated all their equipment simultaneously. And that becomes a fixed charge for the life of the contract.
And I know on this pouch terminal, whatever, you have a calculation you go through since, but did the contract demand of the NYPA change in April 2003, according to you?
The FERC is rather inconsistent on their positions. No, the contract demand had to have been reduced to zero as of April of 2003. Because the FERC prohibited us from collecting contract demand charges from that date forward. So when we got to October and there was consumption, FERC...
Well, now you're talking about the pouch thing, right?
Yes.
I mean, in general, if the contract demand, because they're self-supplying, is zero, then you wouldn't get any of these charges under this tariff, would you?
FERC says at page 48 of its brief that netting does not reduce the contract demand. So the contract demand should have persisted to this date. Con Ed should be allowed to charge contract demand charges because the contract did not go to zero.
But I thought FERC's position was that contract demand does not apply to self-supply at all. That is to on-site self-supply. It only applies to remote and to third party. I'm not saying they're right, but that is their position.
That's their position, Your Honor.
They still have it, regardless whether they're self-supplying at any particular moment, so long as this contract's in effect, they still have the right to insist to stop self-supplying, stop netting, and insist on getting their energy from Con Ed, right?
Which is exactly what they did in October of 2003 with the pouch terminal. They came back. If the NYISO netting tariff were eliminated, NYPA would come back to Con Edison for service and would be entitled to it under this contract. So there isn't any limitation on their service entitlement. They continue to enjoy that.
And if they can get it cheaper from Con Ed than the amount that they would lose by netting, they might well do it.
They can come back at any time. If I could add one last comment about in response to Judge Shadle's concern about the Entergy contract and the options, the third-party options. I'd mention that the Entergy has not acquired its power from a third party. Entergy has not to date acquired its power from a third party. It's netted in the ISO market.
Well, your theory is under this contract, it can't, or even if it does, it still has to pay Con Ed.
Exactly, Your Honor.
But has it not purchased from other third parties because there aren't any, or because it just hasn't?
Con Ed isn't the only, I believe it's because there aren't any. Because it's better, it's been more advantageous to net in the market. Okay. But Con Edison is the only entity that's capable of delivering power to Entergy.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, so